From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
We are joined in spirit by our super producer, Noel, the Madman Brown, who will be returning. His absence will hopefully make the heart grow fonder, right?
Certainly. It will for me.
Yeah. And they call me Ben. You are you. And that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Again, here, closer and closer to the end of 2016. Reminds me of that Yeats poem, Matt. What rough beast, its hour come at last, slouches toward Bethlehem.
Do you remember that? Yeah, I do remember that.
The Second Coming, I believe it's called.
Yeah, I am certainly ready for 2016 to be over, though I do dread a bit of what the next may bring.
What will happen in 2017? Yeah, that's the matter of perspective, right? The most frightening thing that people can think about when you look at the future and turns of events is what if people in 2050 look back on this as the good old days?
Oh, I was going to say they will, definitely.
They
but, you know.
Well, the world is big. It depends on where you live, right? And even perhaps more importantly, what your position in a given society has been. And that's something we're exploring today. Much of human history has been a study in unequal rights, either by this constant conflict, right? Either by groups striving for better representation or other groups fighting to maintain a system of oppression that benefits them. You know, I'm not a big believer in hierarchies. I think they're garbage. I think they're for the birds, not even the cool birds, like the crappy birds, like seagulls, right?
Yeah, I haven't seen many crow hierarchies. Maybe there are some.
Oh, there are. I'm sure there are. But you're absolutely right. I don't like these things, hierarchies in general. I understand why they're necessary for some people, but philosophically and historically, they're used to oppress the many for the benefit of the few. That is what happens with hierarchies. Whether you're talking about the tribal system in the UK, which continues to exist, of course, I guess people feel better about it when we call it an aristocracy, or whether you're talking about continued cultural repression in other countries, it all boils down to the same thing. And it's a source of massive conflict. And these conflicts have occurred, the cycle of conflict rather has occurred multiple times. In the US, for example, we have the struggle for civil rights. That was, again, a group of people who were benefiting from a system of oppression versus a group of people who were losing out because of that same system. And the reasoning behind these oppressive systems are based on so many different things. There's so many different reasons. I know it sounds like I just picked on the United Kingdom and I just picked on the United States, but these are just two examples. Like there are multiple kinds of oppression.
Yeah, you can go to gender discrimination, where you're looking at male and female and one is treated differently. Over the course of history, it's largely fallen on the females who have been oppressed in this way. Mm-hmm. But let's not forget, women in the United States could not vote.
Yeah.
Couldn't vote for president, couldn't vote for anything. Just a few decades ago. It hasn't been that long.
Yeah, right. And as we record this, this country and many other countries in the West are in the grips of a new kind of gender discrimination with people who are trans, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that a person who identifies as female but was biologically identified as a male at the time of their birth, that's becoming a huge legal issue here in the U.S. in 2016. Mm-hmm. And then there are other things too, right? There's the untouchable caste of India. And these folks have endured horrific discrimination. Mm-hmm. And the government, of course, has taken steps to try to mitigate this situation. But the caste system of India is not something that's going to be swept away by a convenient law. You know what I mean? It's too deep set.
Then you have various systems of slavery, everything from chattel slavery, like in the United States, for example, back in the day, wage slavery, bondage labor, mandatory minimums, and prison labor. I mean, it's a version of it. It's not outright slavery, but.
Oh, wage slavery.
Yeah.
That might have to be its own episode.
Yeah. Yeah, we can talk about that. We should definitely have Nolan for that one.
Does anybody want to write to us and let us know your opinion of wage slavery? Actually, this is a sidebar. This is a sidebar.
Okay. Here. Okay.
Could I ask what your first job was?
My first job was working poolside as a server at the Piedmont Driving Club.
Fancy.
And then I got an internship here. So I had two.
Oh, man. Okay. Without going too deep into my past, because I don't usually say that sort of stuff, my first legal job was at a grocery store.
Nice.
And I tried, Matt, to get fired. I did numerous things. They just wouldn't fire me because the other people at the grocery store were that bad.
Wow.
And so eventually I just stopped going.
Man, you weren't worried about the stigma of being fired from one job?
No. I went ahead and told them that I was just going to stop showing up because I'm getting another job. And I got a different job and then just stopped going. That was the only way, because I had said I'll quit before.
Mm-hmm.
And they would call with a follow-up thing. But it was just very strange. This is a surreal situation.
Sure. You know? I feel like you're opening up more than I've heard you open up in a while, so I want to keep going, but I know we have to continue with
I'm
the podcast.
Setting it up because, okay, let's – you were a servant. I was a grocer. Those are types of occupations, right?
Sure, sure.
I mean, I was still a servant, so.
Aren't we all? Well, most of us.
There's also ethnic or so-called racial discrimination. That is when you hear about minorities being persecuted, or when you hear about – groups that maybe to an outsider seem pretty much identical.
Sure.
Right. When you hear about these groups having bitter, bitter rivalries, one famous situation in Europe, of course, is the Roma, who have, met numerous types of prejudice and discrimination and stereotyping, and have in many cases never fully assimilated into the local culture of wherever they are.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a lot of that has to do with cultural differences and clashing with whichever power is seen as the norm or whichever group is seen as the norm in an area.
And then there's cultural discrimination, right?
Yep.
One big example of this would be World War II era Japan's nationalistic superiority complex over China and the puppet state of Manchuria that they built. They did unspeakable things. And they did it because they thought the other people weren't like really human.
Yeah, that's a common theme.
That's a common theme. And then there's religious discrimination too, right?
Yes, and for examples of this, you can look to Catholic persecution of Jewish peoples, Protestants, native peoples in colonized countries. And you can also see this in the various forms of discrimination practiced between Islamic and Jewish cultures.
Yeah, yeah. There's another aspect to this, however, and this is the strangest thing. Ladies and gentlemen, in some cases, societies have no concrete reasoning behind a discriminatory practice. None.
Yeah. I wanted to say that I feel that a lot of times there's not that much of a concrete basis for a lot of these discriminatory practices, but these in particular that we're about to look at just feels like why?
So, yeah, for instance, the Burukumin of Japan were historically treated in a manner very similar to the Dalit or untouchables in India, despite the fact that they are not just visually identical, but genetically identical to mainstream Japanese population, and they are practicing Buddhist, and they are not in almost any other way distinguishable from the rest of Japan. We're talking about discrimination based on name or neighborhood, but today, ladies and gentlemen, yes, there is a point to our brief exploration. Today we're looking at another, perhaps lesser known example of a similarly mysterious case of persecution.
It's a group of people known as the Kago, also Kapo, Ago, Gahet, or
Krestia,
which stands for Christian.
Right. So who are these people? What's going on? Why have most of the world's population never ever heard of them? We will tell you after a brief word from our sponsor.
Welcome back. So we're looking at this group called the Kago. Now, historical records have proven that for centuries, communities in Western France and Northern Spain practiced brutal, systematic discrimination against this group of people. There was a system that was well established, and it was oddly uniform throughout much of France.
Right, because this is unusual because at this time people weren't communicating as easily as people communicate today, which means that there's a lot of drift or creep in local customs. And this was also one of the reasons why heresy was such a big concern for the Catholic Church. Let's say there's a church, it's kind of isolated, it's out in the Alps or something. Nobody's seen these people for 15, 20 years.
They're getting some weird ideas, changing stuff around.
Doing some weird things. Right, so this happened. This happened constantly, and that is one of the reasons why the persecution of Kago in France and in that area of Spain is fascinating. Now, of course, it evolves over time, but it seemed to have a very oddly specific system to this persecution. And the Kago were Catholic. They were just as Catholic as their neighbors who were not Kago, but they were only reluctantly allowed into the auspices of the church. Let's talk about some of the community rules applying to these people. They could not take communion the same way as, I guess, the more legitimate people of their community. They had to enter and sit in separate parts of the church, and they were also buried in separate graveyards.
And when it came to the church, there are several instances of churches that had entrances just in the back, you know, smaller doors that appear to be, that's what they were for. Some of them have signs that even have the word Kago or one of these other names referred to them as it. But there were also a few that had strange entrances where you had to climb up a ladder in order to get into another ladder system inside the church. Fascinating the lengths that some of these churches went to separate this group of people from the rest of their flock.
Because they were seen somehow as tainted.
Yeah.
Dirty. Yeah. They were also not allowed to walk barefoot, which gave rise to rumors that their feet were webbed. And in some places, they were required to wear a badge that was occasionally in the shape of a goose's foot.
Yeah. And it was red.
Yeah.
Just a red badge that you had to wear.
Caught red-footed.
I was going to say, again, sounds familiar to historical references.
Oh, right.
Insert here.
Right.
And also they were only allowed to make purchases in town on Mondays. This is according to an 1848 account.
Yeah. So this already sounds weird, but it goes on. They were restricted to certain trades, particularly carpentry. This led to situations in which Kago may end up building the very same church that's going to persecute them and their family later. Talk about a head trip, huh?
Yeah, a little bit.
And we're, by the way, one of the great resources we got for this was a from an author named Daniel Hawkins, who wrote a paper called Chimeras That Degrade Humanity, The Cagot and Discrimination. So we found some other things here. I want to read a small selection from this paper. Restrictive legislation concerning Cagot appeared many times after 1288, which is when we see more detailed municipal records. Mm-hmm. While details differed, prohibitions typically expressed similar concerns. They required that Cagot were segregated in their living quarters, occupations, and day-to-day interactions. They were forbidden from marrying non-Cagot. They could not enter taverns, hold cabarets, use public fountains, sell food or wine, touch food in the market, work with livestock, or enter a mill. They were not allowed to carry arms other than professional tools. And this goes to the example we talked about earlier. There was a severe and brutal punishment for transgressors. So if we go back with our time-traveling hypothetical French Matt Frederick, which, by the way, I'm liking this character.
Okay.
I see him in a beret, but I don't know if that's historically accurate.
I don't think so, but okay. Let's go with it.
What about a cassock?
Yes.
Cassock.
Yes.
All right. So if we go back to that time where our – Oh, Matt, what's your French name?
Pierre?
Pierre. Okay. All right. Pierre Frederick. When Pierre Frederick is walking by, he may and sees that hand being nailed to the door, he may well have not said a word if he was familiar with the discrimination against Cagot, because we know it's happened several times. One Cagot merchant was punished for touching the main baptismal font by having his hand severed from his arm and nailed to a door. I don't think it was the door of the church, but
that would be – that seems like that would be a bad idea. Nail right. A severed arm to the place where everybody's going to enter.
Just the hand.
The hand, sure. Just the hand. There was another account of a man who allegedly grew food on his land and farmed it, and he had metal spikes pushed through his feet as punishment.
Wow. That's very odd, you know, mm-hmm. and it's disturbing. Again, when you consider that these people, although you might have heard them described as swarthy at some point, mm-hmm. I also read something where they were described as being fair-skinned.
Yeah, there are widely differing accounts of what a Cagot looks like.
Right. Rumors about them were wide-ranging, rampant stuff. We can just go down the list, right?
Oh, sure, yeah. They were viewed as heretics, like we said, despite their regular attendance to church.
Despite being Catholics, they were viewed as not being Catholic.
Yes.
They were accused of being lepers, which we'll get into. Mm-hmm. There were rumors about them holding secret meetings for nefarious unknown purposes.
Yeah. Again, we see this throughout history. Like, what are they meeting in secret about? Are they actually meeting in secret, dude, or are you just a little paranoid? Anyway.
They're probably saying, hey, does everybody have their hands?
Yeah. What are strategies we can use to not be as persecuted?
Yeah, we're pro-hand.
Yeah. They're also accused of being descendants of Gehazi. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but this was the wicked servant of the prophet Elisha. And, you know, being the children of this person, it was believed that they were all cursed with the curse that was placed on Gehazi.
Oh, that's similar to the old Latter-day Saint policy of discrimination against darker-skinned people, right? Yeah, Gehazi, is a figure found in the Book of Kings.
Yes.
He was in a position of power, but he was corrupt. Rudyard Kipling wrote a poem about him, but I can't remember exactly what it was. So this was something that was common, in this era of Christianity, which was to find a biblical basis, however tenuous, to rationalize mistreatment of an individual. So it's a long book. If you read closely enough and think creatively enough, you're bound to find something. And I want to note here, So his big sin was avarice, right? He was stealing stuff. He was racking up change in his master's names.
Tricking people, yeah.
Yeah. And he was guilty of duplicity and dishonesty. So Elisha, the prophet, denounced him and passed upon him the terrible doom. And this is a quote from Kings, that leprosy of Naaman would cleave to him and his descendants forever.
Yep.
So
that's where you pull some, you know, mm-hmm. someone in the church believing that to be true. And hey, here's someone I can apply that to.
But this curse came with at least some allegations of dark powers. Isn't that right?
Yeah, there were allegations that they were sorcerers. It was believed that they could bewitch cattle, which sounds a little more fun than it probably should to me.
It sounds like you know, of course, these are largely agricultural communities, mm-hmm. but right now it sounds like one of the most useless superpowers ever. Whether you're a villain or a hero, you're pretty much restricted. You have to live around livestock for it to even matter.
Yeah.
Cattle witcher is not going to be a threat in New York City.
Gosh, that's a great character though. The cattle witcher.
On the next episode of The Cattle Witcher.
Yes. It was also believed that perhaps they had the power of the evil eye, where if they stared at your child long enough, or anyone really, mm-hmm. they can cause terrible things to happen to them.
They could curse with a glance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this ties into some of the more wide-ranging accusations of paranormal ability that occur with this sort of persecution. You'll also hear stuff about being able to poison wells, mm-hmm. or being able to, you know, when they're talking about bewitching cattle, they're talking about the cattle falling ill or perhaps miscarrying mm-hmm. during birth and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, that's why they weren't allowed to touch food. It was believed that any food that they touched, no matter at what stage, that's why you can't farm, it will rot immediately, will be soiled immediately. You cannot eat or, you know, do anything with edible objects that are touched by these kago. That's the belief.
Cattle witchers. I'm stuck on it now. Cattle witchers. Yeah. So you also find that in the real estate, right? You find evidence mm-hmm. of this belief in the real estate.
Oh yeah. With these powers. That's why a lot of times you would see their residences, the areas where they lived had to be separated by some body of water, a stream of water, mm-hmm. just enough to where those mystical powers can't carry over because their beliefs about how magic operates.
Today, you're not going to hear much about the kago.
No.
Families that discover this heritage in the modern day often will hide it in fear of continuing low-level discrimination against their spouses or their children. So very, 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 very few come forward in the modern day. And the population itself was always relatively small in comparison to, you know, the rest of France and Spain. Now it seems set to fade into nothingness, but there's still so many unanswered questions. Matt, who are these people? Why did they become the repressed class? And maybe most importantly, where did they come from?
These are all questions we're going to look at right after a word from our sponsor.
Here's where it gets crazy.
No one really knows. No one knows for certain where the kago originate.
Yeah.
But there are some theories.
There are many, 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 many theories. They are of a varying plausibility, and they are all somewhat fascinating, I would say. For instance, were they the descendants of Moorish soldiers who, for instance, during the Muslim conquest of Spain or areas of Spain, simply migrated up and out into France?
It's a possibility.
Yeah. Did they begin as a guild of skilled medieval woodworkers with their persecution rising as a form of commercial rivalry that eventually got solidified into tradition? So people didn't know why these dudes were dirty, but they knew that their parents thought that.
What if they were Moorish medieval woodworkers?
Mm-hmm. And so this, yeah, this ties back into the question that I earlier asked you, Matt, about your first occupation.
Mm-hmm.
Because the strange thing is that if we lived in a different society or we lived in even a different time period, we would overwhelmingly be likely to continue the work that our parents did as even a guild or caste or something. So,
because we would be apprentices, hopefully, if we were lucky and talented.
So if your father's a cobbler, you're a cobbler. If your father is
an accountant.
Yeah, then you're an accountant. If your father's a military officer, you follow the same thing. If your father is a cattle witcher, then you are also I'm sorry, you're also a cattle witcher. I'm going to let it go. I'm not in any way condoning the bewitchment of livestock, of cattle. They've got it tough enough, right?
However, I am 100% bewitch all the cattle that you possibly can, and then tell me how you did it. Write to us, conspiracy@howstuffworks.com. Okay.
All right. Yes. Yes, please. Let Matt know the source of your dark bovine-related powers. So the thing that we see here that's strange is that when people had less social mobility, when your parents or your grandparents' occupations would largely determine your own occupation – we also see a society where certain occupations are considered more valuable than others, or maybe a better way to say it is certain occupations are seen as much less valuable. For instance, executioners had some of the same laws against their behavior as did Cagot, and this was in Germany, perhaps. An executioner can't go to the bar, can't touch food or drink around people, because the executioner, like his father before him, makes a living by killing people.
Yeah.
And that's seen as, you know, morally reprehensible, but necessary for society. And we see this in some other cultures, for instance, working with hides or disposing of human waste.
Yeah.
Like the untouchables, right? That would be a lower caste job. So,
and a lot of it seems to arise from almost it's a combination of lack of scientific understanding of how some of it works, a lack of technology for cleaning, like and being able to cleanse oneself after working a job such as killing people or, you know, taking the hides off of animals.
Sure.
You know, this perception of unclean.
I mean, it's rife with disease. This is before germ theory.
And it's true that it is. Like, it actually is. So the not having the technology also creates that system where somebody in the historical record experienced, you know, drinking with the executioner who happened to kill somebody who had a terrible disease.
And boom, next thing you know.
Yeah, I mean.
Kuru. No, I'm kidding.
Well, no, but. I mean, that's just how it happened. It's just the only way that it happens.
Right. And it's something that people accept. And also, of course, I'm just saying kuru because I like the word. The only way that somebody can get kuru is by consuming, human brains. Yeah. Which will give you those prions. Which are bad news. Speaking of bad news, Matt.
Yes.
I just realized something. If your avatar in the Middle Ages there, in the
Pierre?
Pierre in the 1300s, right?
Yes.
If he's wearing a cassock, it makes your situation even worse.
No.
Cause you're probably the priest or a priest.
Okay.
Oh, Pierre.
I have a lot to get ready for. There's a mass later.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You don't want him to get you maybe even want to help the guy, but you're like, I'm not getting that filthy Cagot blood on my cassock.
To use my shoe to open the door.
Use my shoe to open the door. Quick, everyone, check the cattle. So there's this other idea that they were descendants of earlier, cultural groups and that this somehow made them not worthy of trust,
mm-hmm.
or made them tainted, made them somehow other, made them threatening to a degree. And one would be that they were descendants of the Goths. The Kogoth first appear in records as early as the 10th century, but they became more prominent from the 13th century on, and they were in both sides of the Western Pyrenees. They lived in these small, poor, segregated communities on the periphery of these villages and towns. So they've been around for so long that it's easily understandable that someone would rationalize persecuting them by saying, well, you know, you remember those other guys from centuries ago? Yeah, it's them.
Yeah.
Don't trust them.
And there are a couple other theories about groups that came through France and Spain as conquerors at one point or another, like the Saracens. Mm-hmm. Like they're, again, remnants who perhaps have switched over to Catholicism, and now they continue to live in the area. Their families do.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're bad news just because of that. Again, these are all possibilities. Mm. And maybe, Ben, it's a range of these. Like, it's a combination of all of these things, of just people that look other.
Yeah. Yeah, possibly. We'll get to the conspiratorial angle of this, but there are more than you might think, because obviously we're looking at a mainstream community that conspired to repress a very small minority, which is odd because I think in the 1600s, the Kogoth were maybe 2% of the population. So never in large numbers. Although I did remember some other stuff I wanted to mention.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you found this in your research. Some more specificity about Kogoth. So like okay. you and I said, they were described as fair-skinned by some, as swarthy by others.
Dark-skinned,
light-skinned.
The earlobes.
Yes, that's the thing. That's what I wanted to mention. They supposedly lacked earlobes and were magicians, sorcerers, had an infectious, terrible odor. They were always accused of smelling bad, and they gave off great heat. Here's
what?
A quote. When the south wind blew, their lips, jugular glands, and the duck foot mark under their left armpit all swelled.
What?
Yeah, so they are considered to be smelly, to have these strange physical ailments.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to one of the biggest rationalizations for persecuting these people, which was that they are lepers and Cretans.
So I'm familiar with lepers. That would be I know that encompasses several different diseases
sure.
of the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But a lot of it has to do with infectious disease that could be transmitted
mm-hmm.
Easily if interacting with this person, right? And that would make sense. Make sure these people aren't interacting with the everyday public as to not kill everyone in the village.
Right.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. So one of the prevailing beliefs among historians about the Kogoth is that leprosy was the essence of this phenomenon. People used to think that leprosy was inherited, right?
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was a poison of the generations in the blood. However, even after people knew that leprosy was not a purely inherited trait, you know, that could communicate between unrelated people,
mm-hmm.
Some authors consider the Kogoth to be a special case of hereditary lepers, that the disease was just kind of concentrated in them. However, another writer said that maybe the birth of the Kogoth when the records were appearing in the 10th century started when people who were already infected with something and considered lepers banded together on the periphery of a town.
In solidarity.
And to make their own village.
Yeah.
And that later, you know, their descendants were affected by the stigma of the disease, even though they didn't carry it. They wow. just came from that crappy home situation. So the weird thing is, though, that aside from, you know, these vestigial traits or these vestigial rules of, you know, don't touch stuff with your hands, don't go through the same door, et cetera. Mm-hmm. People seem to interact. They seem to exist in the community. You know, if they were doing woodworking, you would still take a table from the person.
Yeah. Somehow the wood was fine.
Somehow the wood was fine. Yeah. Also, we know that groups of Kago were proven not to have leprosy. In 1600, after decades of dispute, people complained of discrimination. Kago complained of discrimination to Parliament, and they gave them a thorough medical examination.
Mm-hmm.
They examined 22 people, all carpenters or joiners, and they exams at this time were not the turn your head and cough inconveniences of the modern age. These people had their bodies palpated, their arms were bled. They applied heated cups to them to check their circulation. And the doctors came back with the results and they said, well, these are just ordinary people. They're fine. They're in, the quote is, they're in all health in their body, exempt from all contagious maladies and without any disposition to those maladies requiring them to be separated from the company of other healthy people. So they blew it out of the water.
Yeah. They didn't find any quote, peculiar diseases.
But leprosy at the time was not considered purely a specific physical ailment. In earlier years, it was more of a umbrella or catch-all description for possibly a spiritual thing. So your body could be fine, but you might be morally or spiritually leprous. That's why the Kago were also occasionally called white lepers, which is just a very unappealing name.
Yeah, I dislike that.
Well, could it simply be that they were discriminated against because they were poor? We know that the state of the poor in France and Spain at the time was the social position was very, very different. It was considered an affront to have to see the poor.
Yeah, but then there are accounts, at least from that 1848 reference that I gave, mm-hmm. where the poor people, the peasants, are the ones who are prosecuting
yeah.
the Kago.
They're the most opposed.
Yeah.
So that's a chicken and egg thing. Was their poverty a result of this discrimination, or was the discrimination a result of the poverty? I tend to think the former. But you're right, and we see this in modern societies today too. If you want people to be satisfied – with their position in an unfair hierarchy, all you have to do is put at least one more rung on the ladder below them.
Yep.
Give them someone to look down on, and they will stop looking up to wonder what's happening at the top.
That is unfortunate and too true.
Too true. It seems that later, the rise of racially based accusations, like, oh, these swarthy Moor soldiers mm-hmm. or whatever, that they came about after the decline of leprosy, after the decline of physical threat from disease, meaning that the racism happened afterwards to rationalize the pre-existing prejudice.
Wow, man. You know, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
It's so disturbing.
If it's not one thing, it's another.
Well, what I found is that the way a lot of these these rumors that we discussed earlier and all these things that the Kago were purportedly to be able to do and smell like and all these things, a lot of it was handed down through songs that were they called them party songs mm-hmm. that would be spread in probably a tavern where it's the peasants all drinking together. And this makes so much sense to me now, Ben. Drinking together, singing about the rung of the ladder that's below them, to make themselves feel better. I can totally see that now as Pierre in the tavern. Wow, that is really disturbing.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding. And here's another thing though. Next question. right? We're probably never going to have an answer about where this group of people came from, where they actually came from, and why they were originally persecuted. We just have those best guesses. Mm-hmm. And sadly, we are probably not going to find out, because I know there's so many people in the audience now who are probably yelling at the speaker, DNA, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Just do the DNA test. Fantastic point. If there were someone to do a DNA test on, you can read probably the most recent thing you can read about this disappearing group of people is an article in the Independent from about 2008, where one woman from the French Pyrenees, Marie-Pierre Menet Beza, is talking about her ancestry. At the time, she was a 40-something mother of three, and she was being billed as the last living Cagot.
Or at least the last known.
The last one who will admit to being Cagot. Mm-hmm. And they say it's a bad thing. She said it's still a bad thing in the mountains. In 2008, the French are ashamed of what they did. The Cagot are ashamed of what they were. And no one will confess that they are of Cagot descent. So this means that this entire concept, whatever it was based on, is disappearing, because now the conspiracy has shifted. It went from mainstream French communities conspiring to essentially make life hell and keep these people at the bottom of the social barrel, to a conspiracy by those people's descendants, by the Cagot descendants, to escape and erase their past, just like that guy in Gattaca, played by Ethan Hawke. Great movie.
Thank you, man.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Ethan.
To go back to Marie-Pierre really fast.
Yes.
At the very end of that article, mm-hmm. they're asking about her children, because she has several children.
Yeah.
And the big thing she says is, she's like, no, I can't show you pictures of my children because of the stigma. Mm-hmm. It remains mm-hmm. so much in this area today. You can't even know what my children look at, just in case.
And she also says that Cagot, she's one of the people who says that Cagot are described as swarthy, mm-hmm. or as darker skinned.
Pestiferous.
Yes. They called the pestiferous people, which has an unfortunate ring to it. And with this, we end our narrative of the Cagot, the shifting social conspiracy, first of a group, of a mainstream group to essentially enslave, socially, bind mm-hmm. a group, and then that group's collective effort to end itself.
Yeah.
It's a very successful effort to do so. But these are not the only vanishing people in the world. We know that there are several other examples, right? The Aromanians and the Rusians, who are both mentioned in the article in The Independent. The Aromanians, they date back to Roman colonization. They're spread across the southern Balkans, but they're believed to be almost extinct, or their cultural identity and evidence of their culture lives on with some Grecian festivals. And then the Rusians are, they're around 1.2 million expected to, or estimated to live in Europe. Over half of them are in the Ukraine. They're not recognized by Ukraine because of the communist regime of the 50s. And that's the time their church was also eradicated. Mm. But they're responsible for a lot of those beautiful wooden churches that you can see in the area. One of the points here is that our species doesn't, you know, just lose memories, doesn't just lose cities, which we've covered, doesn't just lose civilizations.
No, it also loses entire cultures, entire groups of people who are alike by blood, who are also alike by language and by custom. You know, Ben, one of the other things we lose are entire animal species. I know that's another podcast, but
yeah, that's another podcast too. And It's true, unfortunately, but it is also true that now in the modern age, we have the ability to preserve some of this stuff, and we have the ability, thanks to the rise of easily affordable recording technology, to preserve some piece of the past, some knowledge, some essence of the days and the people that came before. And that's why I would suggest, this is just my opinion, but I would suggest to all of you out there listening to this, whether in 2016 or 2106, don't hesitate to, if you have older family members or if you have someone older in your community and you think that that community is not long for this world, because it happens. Every civilization rises and falls. You can easily take a second to just interview them and record their answers. And it's something that you will like and your kids will like and on and on, on and on. And nobody has to be a cattle witcher. So with that being said, before we head out today, it's time for our
shout out corners. Skadoosh. We have a single shout out to give today. It is from Redacted. That's what I'm going to call that. And here it goes. I'm a military psychiatrist currently in residency training. So when you ask for stories from people who use mind-altering drugs in the military, well, it's kind of my thing. Regarding drugs in general, all active duty personnel get randomly drug tested frequently. And unless you have very good medical reason to be on a drug, you're likely going to be dishonorably discharged.
Yeah, we're going to continue reading just some excerpts from Redacted's email, which is fantastic, by the way. He says, or she says, regarding uppers, yes, some are still used, but to a substantially lesser degree than you might suspect. Provigil, which is the brand name for modafinil, is a non-amphetamine stimulant vastly preferred over amphetamine derivatives. We still don't know exactly how it works, but it seems to simulate alpha brainwave activity while decreasing delta and theta waves, effectively simulating wakefulness.
Regarding amphetamines, while ADHD is still probably underdiagnosed, chances are if you've made it through basic training, you don't need ADHD meds. Personally, I hate them. I've seen several sailors and Marines get kicked out of the service after getting caught using them to try and boost their performance. I've also seen several service members get tipped over into a frank psychosis that appears to have been triggered by amphetamine overdoses. It's scary, it's dangerous, and I keep my sailors as far away from the stuff as possible.
And then about battlefield medications. All sorts of really crazy stuff goes down in a firefight. Sometimes you cannot afford to lose a rifleman, no matter what the cause. We have combinations of common medicines that can keep a trigger puller in the fight for longer than nature would allow, but it's a last-ditch kind of move and deeply frowned upon by almost all medical professionals.
That is fascinating, that one in particular. He talks about nootropics, which may be something that you heard from the Joe Rogan podcast or somewhere else. That's how I heard about them. And the person writing this email says, I have personally cared for patients that have had substantially catastrophic reactions from trying to get a, quote, Bradley Cooper in limitless, unquote, state. And these people have crashed and burned on the way there. I strongly advise that patients avoid this type of supplement or medication.
So it finishes up talking about withdrawal. It said, in the vast majority of cases, morphine withdrawal cannot kill you. They say it's awful, it's painful, it's grotesque, but unlikely to be life-threatening. Nowhere near as dangerous as opiate overdose. And so it says, hope that helps. If you have any other questions about medicine, psychiatry, or the military, particularly military medicine, I'd be happy to share what I can. Thanks so much for writing in, Redacted. We appreciate your time immensely.
Truly, thank you.
Yeah, and we'd like to hear from you, ladies, gentlemen, other folks identifying otherwise, werewolves, witches, cattle witchers. Write
please,
to us.
Please, definitely those.
You can check us out on Facebook and Twitter, where we are Conspiracy Stuff. We're a Conspiracy Stuff show on Instagram. And if you would like to send an email to us directly, you are in luck. We are.
Conspiracy at HowStuffWorks.com.